Today's daf is daf kuf. We're going to start with the Mishnah on daf tes, on daf tzadi tes amid beis. That's four lines up before the end of tzadi tes amid beis. And we're going to first talk about the issue of carrying something underneath a tree when the branches of the tree, the foliage, spreads in such a way that it reaches almost towards the ground, and therefore, when you're inside the cover of the foliage, you're really in effect in a Rishus HaYachid because you have machitzas all around you. Ilan Shahaya Mesich al Ha'aretz, so that the branches of this tree are tipped over towards the ground on all sides, and they come, the branches reach close to the ground. And the Mishnah stipulates, im ein nofo gavoa min ha'aretz shlosha tfachim, if the branches and the leaves are within three tfachim of the ground, and therefore if there's such a small distance between the tree, the branches and the, when I say branches, I mean branches and the leaves, and the ground is such a small, it's 2.9 tfachim, then we apply the principle of lavud, and we're going to view it as if this area is completely surrounded by mechitzos, making it a rishus hayachid is metaltal and tachtav. You're allowed to carry underneath this foliage, you are surrounded by the foliage on all sides, and you can carry even more than four amos. And the anafim are considered like mechitzos. If, on the other hand, the branches don't reach that low, so it's already an opening area between the ground and the bottom of the branches and the leaves of three tfachim, then we can no longer apply lavud, and therefore it would have the status of a karmelis, and therefore you could only be allowed to carry up to dalet amos. That's the first part of the Mishnah. Now the Sefer of the Mishnah addresses the issue of sitting on the roots of the tree. And Shroshav Gvoim in Aret Shlosha Tfachim, if the roots of the tree climb above the ground level by three tfachim or more, Lo Yeshev Alehem, you're not allowed to sit on that area that's above three tfachim, because that's considered an Elon. And the Mishnah says at the end of Beitza, Elu hein mishum shvus lo olim be'ilon, that the Chachamim enacted a shvus prohibiting you from climbing up a tree, and for that matter sitting on a tree, or benefiting in other ways from a tree. We'll see later on in today's daf, you're not allowed to lean on a tree. And all of these Shroshim that we're prohibiting as far as benefiting from them are three tfachim above the ground. The implication of the Mishnah is that if they're not three tfachim above the ground, then they have the status of karka, and then you'd be allowed to sit on them. So he writes here in the note that aval b'mokom anomuch shebahem ein bo iser zeh, that when it says in the Mishnah, Gvoim in Aret Shlosha is Lo Yeshev Aleim, that's only on the part that's above three tfachim. If you can sit on the part that's below three tfachim, that's fine. Okay then, so now we're going to start the Gemara on the bottom of Daf Tzadi Tes Amid Beis, the last line on the Daf. Omer Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua. And now we're talking about this case where the branches and the foliage of the tree form mechitzos around the inner part of the tree. Ein metaltalin bo, however, Rav Huna sets a restriction, yeser mi beis sasayim. If we're talking about a very large tree with a widespread foliage, an umbrella that encompasses an area that's more than beis sasayim, then what kicks in is the gzera of karpaf, which means if you have an area that's wider than a beis hasayim, which is an area where you can plant two saw of chitin, in such an area, the Rabbanan made a gzera that you're not allowed to carry more than four amos. It's considered like a karmelis, but only if it's what's called lo hukaf ledira. And in this case, according to Rav Huna, the foliage is lo hukaf ledira. My taima, why is that called lo hukaf ledira, and therefore it gets the status of a karpaf and a karmelis? You're not allowed to carry four amos inside that area. And the Gemara answers on the top here of Daf Kuf Amud Aleph, and now we start the Daf for today. Mishum Dahavi Dira Shetashmisha La'avir V'chol Dira Shetashmisha La'avir Ein Metaltel Ba Yeser Mi Beis Asayim. Now what this means is that the primary function that you're interested in is not living inside the mechitzos, being surrounded by mechitzos for purposes of, you know, raising your family, having a tea and crumpets, and going to sleep, and all the residential dear aspects, but rather, it's for the avir outside the mechitzos. Because what happens is the following. There were people whose jobs were to guard the area. They were security people. And, you know, at night, if they didn't have a place to sleep, instead of sleeping out there under the sky, they would sleep under this foliage. But, again, that's not really for the sake of Dira. And therefore, since the purpose is really for the air or the space that's outside of the mechitzos, therefore, the mechitzos themselves cannot be considered as l'shem dira, as hukaf l'dira. It's not called hukaf l'dira. Therefore, if it's more than a beis hasayim, then it's got the status of a karpaf. That's as far as the ratio of the Mishnah is concerned, and the balance of our discussion today will be about the seifa of the Mishnah, and the issue here is about the shrushim, the roots of the tree. Are they considered the elon, and therefore they're prohibited? You're not allowed to sit there, etc. What we're about to embark upon now is a machlokes between Rabbah and Rav Sheshes. Itmar. Sharshe elon Haboyim milamala mishlosha letoch shlosha. The machlokas that we're about to learn addresses the case of roots that rise above shlosha tvachim, which therefore have the status of an ilan, because they're no longer part of the karka, and you would not let us sit them. And that for sure is prohibited, but letoch shlosha. The roots make a curve. They are what you call kafuf. Kafuf means that they turn towards the bottom, and part of the roots now are below three tefachim. And those roots, in their source, so to speak, were above three tefachim. Now they go down below three tefachim. Rabba Amar Mutil Shtamish Bahem. Rabba says that's not considered an elon, because it's somach lekarka, it's below three tefachim. Who cares if the roots originally, you know, initially went up above three tefachim? But Rav Sheshes Amar Osel Lishtamish, the Gemara explains. Rav Amar Mutil Lishtamish Bem Dechol Pachas Mishlosha Di Ara is Arahi. We don't consider this as an elon, it's part of the karka. You're allowed to sit on the karka, you're allowed to lay on the karka on Shabbos. There's no iser of karka, there's only an iser of an elon. Well, anything that's within three tefachim of the karka is considered karka. So Rabbi therefore is mekil and ismati. Rav Sheshes Amar, also lishtamish ben, dekeven de mikoch iser ka'asi asurim. Now let's translate the words of Rav Sheshes literally, and then we'll try to give it a little bit more of a conceptual twist. Literally, what he's saying is that this shoresh, which is technically below three tefachim from the ground, comes from the power, so to speak, the growth of Iser. Of Iser meaning that part of the Shoresh that went above three Tvachim. But I think on a more conceptual level, what Rav Sheshis is trying to convey to us is that these Shroshim, even though they're close to the Ara, but they really belong to the Elon itself. The Elon itself was the part of the Shoresh that went above the three Tvachim. So let's look at the Elon as a totality. And therefore, it's us. Now, the Gemara at this point is going to present three different cases, all of which will depend upon the machlokas between Rav and Rav Sheshis. Rav will be Mekil, and Rav Sheshis will be Oser. And the next case is called Didamu Limishnu Nisa. And we're talking about Shroshim that are similar to the teeth of a jagged stone. And this is a mashal which conveys to us that sometimes you can have, let's say in a steep mountain or so, you may find boulders that are very sharp, they have different edges and parts that shoot out and they go down. So too, in the Nimshal, you can have a tree whose roots come up from underneath the ground, they rise up above ground level, and there are different parts of these roots that actually shoot down. So that the basic direction of the roots is to climb up, but on that branch, so to speak, of the root that climbs up, there are different smaller branches, which are really parts of the roots, that shoot downwards. And that makes it look like, you know, teeth of a boulder, so to speak, in the mashal. And now the Gemara is going to analyze three different scenarios or nuances within this thing called Damu Lim Shunisa. Number one.
Excuse me, I got in Chedesh. What time did you start?
We started just a few minutes ago. I don't know, what time is it now? I don't have a watch. Maybe you didn't get my last...
Thank you.
Maybe you didn't get my last WhatsApp, and I apologize.
Probably
right. Okay, but you didn't miss much. So, and again, keep in mind, Jerry, I'm going to be reviewing this over and over again, what we're doing. So if you'll be fine. So let's go through the three parts of this Mishunisa case. Number one. The sulkin li'ela, those parts of the branches that shoot up above three tfachim asurin. That's undeniable. Because as we said, if it's above three tfachim, it's called an ilan. You're not allowed to benefit from it. And it's not somach l'karka. Denachasin l'tatoi, those parts of the roots that go below three tefach, meaning they're very close to the karka, then sharu, everybody agrees without a doubt, you're allowed to sit or lean on those shroshim which are below three tefach. Where is the machlokes between Rabba and Rav Yosef? Litzdadim. In a case where those small shoots of the roots that go downwards, they are now close to the karka, but they come from that larger branch that shot up above three tefachim. Pluta de Rabba Rav Yosef, Rav Sheshis. According to Rabba, Rabba's going to say that those pieces, those roots that shoot down towards the bottom are within three tefachim, they have a din of karka, you're allowed to sit on them. But Rav Sheshis looks at mikoach Iser Kaasi. He goes back to the root or the source, and the source of these offshoots is the branch that went and rose above three tefachim. And therefore, it's considered nimshach, it's considered part of that shorish. So that's another nafkamina between Rabba and Rav Yosef. V'chein, here's a third nafkamina, anigra. Anigra is a In Hebrew, it's called a ta'ala, which means it's a digging below the ground, maybe for water to go by, sort of like very large gutters, you know, to keep the water going, you know, to irrigate the fields, for example. And now what you have is, you have what's called the Safa, which means the ground level of this Ta'ala, and then you have the subterranean level down below, the depth of the Ta'ala, of the Ta'ala. And it works like this. What you have is, I have a nice diagram here now in my Gemara, I'm sure you have a diagram in your Gemara as well. You have now a very heavy root, a shoresh, and part of it is below ground, part of it is above ground. From ground level, if you measure up to the top of this shoresh, it's less than 3 tefachim. But if you measure the shoresh from the floor of this ta'ala, below subterranean, then you've got more than 3 tefachim. So this is going to depend upon the machlokas between Rabbah and Rav Yosef. According to Rabbah, I'm going to start calculating the height of this shoresh from ground level and up. I don't have to concern myself with a part of the shoresh that's below the ground level. And the reason for that is because, according to Rabbah Shita, I'm benefiting from the part that's above ground level. And that part is less than 3 tefachim from the ground, and therefore it's considered part of the ground. It's not an ilan. Whereas Rav Sheshes will say that it's prohibited because we view the entire ilan, as we said before, as one entity. In this case, the entire shoresh, if you will. And the part of the shoresh that goes below ground, that's also calculated in the ilan. And therefore, he's going to tell you that we start measuring from the karka of the ta'ala, from the floor of this gutter, if you will. And from there, for sure, we're going to get a height of more than 3 tefachim. So therefore, even the part that's above the ground level, that's less than 3 tefachim above the ground level, is also asur. It's nimshach. It is a continuation of the part of the ilan from which it grew, the part of the shoresh from which it grew. Now the Gemara adds another nafkamina between Rav and Rav Yosef. V'chein b'keren zavis. Now you have two walls that reach each other at a 90 degree angle, and there's a tree that is exactly at that corner. The tree shoots up at that corner above the top of the kosel. And the area that's on top of the kosel is less than 2 tefachim, less than 3 tefachim. It's 2 tefachim, 2.9, as we said. Once again, how are we going to calculate the size of the ilan? According to Rabbah, we're going to only calculate the part that's above the head, the top of the kosel, and that has a height of less than 3 tefachim. Whereas according to Rav Sheshes, on the other hand, we're going to go back to the original source of this ilan, and for sure, it shoots up more than 3 tefachim. And now, after presenting all these nafkaminas, the Gemara says we have another case that actually happened in Abai's house, and that also will depend upon the machlokas between Rav and Rav Yosef. Hahu dikla, we have a case of a palm tree that was planted in the foyer or the living room, I don't know exactly where, in the house of Abaye. And apparently what they did was they built around this tree, you know, maybe for beauty purposes or whatever, they built a whole skylight around the tree. So now the tree starts growing and growing, and avisolik apimu, it goes through the mouth, it grows through the mouth of the top of the skylight. So that if you're now up on the roof and you've got this skylight, what you're going to see is that part of the tree is above the skylight. It's actually on the roof. But that part of the tree is less than three tefachim. Also, the Kamid Rav Yosef, Abai comes to ask his Rebbe Rav Yosef, what's the deal with the parts of the branches of this palm tree that are above the ground level of the gag, of the roof, meaning that have shot through the skylight. Visharla. And Rav Yosef said that since, if you would measure from the flat surface of the roof till the top the branches or the foliage of this palm tree that shoot up, it's less than three tefachim, and therefore it's not called an ilan. Omalei Rav Acha bar Tachlifa, he turns to Abai and he says, Disharalach kiraba sharalach? Is it really so that Rav Yosef was matir? He must have been relying on Rava. But you should know that according to Rav Sheshes, this would be also, you would not be allowed to benefit at all from the part that goes above the floor of the gag. Why? Because Rav Sheshes holds Mikochi Surikos. It would go back to the root of the problem, the source of this Elon, and the Elon certainly from its ground level shoots up more than three tefachim. Pshita. Why did Rav Acha feel compelled to have to notify Abai of that? Isn't that just a logical conclusion that Abai could have drawn on his own? Ma'al detem, I would have thought, maybe in this case, even Rav Sheshes would concede that it's muta. I feel Rav Sheshes, because we have a principle called Besa Keman Demali Dami, that a house is considered as if it's full, as if it's got afar from the bottom all the way to the top. It's all completely closed inside. We had a Gemara like that back on Daf Ayin Vav, in the case where you have, instead of a kosel that separates two chatzeros, you've got a kosel that has a window in between the two chatzeros. And even if this window is above 10 tefachim, the Gemara says still you can have one error for both chatzeros because it's basic command of maliyadom. I mean, there are many other cases where the Gemara applies this logic. Now, if you apply the principle of basic command of maliyadom, then lishtamesh bepochus mishlosha samach lagag. Even Rav Sheshes would allow you to enjoy that area that goes from the floor of the gag up to 2.9 tefachim less than 3. And the reason for that is because the rest of the tree is completely gone, so to speak. It's null and void because it's swallowed up inside the bias. So that which is inside the bias is completely incarcerated in the bias, and that which goes above the ceiling of the bias, which means it shoots through the skylight, that's already a separate entity unto itself. Kamash Malon, that's where Rav Acha wanted to point out, that even in this case, Rav Sheshes would still insist that it's Asur, and here we're not going to apply the principle of Beis HaKeman D'Maliyad. Now the Gemara wants to prove Shitas Rav Sheshes from our Mishnah. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Shrashav Gvoim in Ha'aretz Shlosha Tefachim Lo Yeshev Aleihem. If you have roots that rise up above the floor level, the ground level, more than three tefachim, you're not allowed to sit on them. Hechi dami, what's the case? Idlo hadri kaifei, kaifei is kafuf. If it just rises up above three tefachim, and it doesn't bend down lower than three tefachim, is pshita. Why did the Mishnah feel compelled to tell me that? What would have been a hamamina to assume that you're allowed to sit on shroshim that are above three tefachim? It's part of an ilon. El olav, it must be a case, the afal gav da hadre kaife. The chiddush of our Mishnah is addressing a scenario where although the roots climb above three tefachim, then they bend over and down, and they're part of the roots that are now below three tefachim. And that would be, since the Mishnah says you're not allowed to sit on them, that would be a contradiction to Rabba. Lo, li olam de lo hadri kaife. For sure, according to Rabba, we're going to insist that our Mishnah is not talking about a case where the three tefachim of Shoresh now bends down over. And if you ask me pshita, I'll answer you, v'hakam mashmalon, di afagav de tzido echad shavela oretz. that the Mishnah is addressing a case where, again, I have a little picture here, I'll try to describe it in words, where the Shoresh, as it climbs up above ground level, there are two ground levels. You know, we've discussed this on many occasions, where you can have land that's higher than land that's lower. And what happens is you have an Ilan that's exactly situated at that point, let's call it smack up against the higher level, but it's in the lower level, and now you have a Shoresh that goes up from the ground. One side of the Shoresh is equal to the flat surface of the Karka on the higher level. And if you were to analyze and define this Shoresh by the higher level, then it would not be an Ilan, because it doesn't climb up above ground level. But the answer is, and that's what the Mishnah comes to be Mechadesh, and that's something that even Rabba would admit to, that it's also because on the other three sides of the Shoresh, there's only one side of the Shoresh that's flat up against that level of ground that goes higher. But on the other three sides, it is exposed to the airspace of the lower ground, and therefore it's above three tefachim. And we view this Shoresh as three tzadim out of four are above three tefachim, and therefore it has the status of a Shoresh. That's the Kamash of that Mishnah, that you would be prohibited from sitting on that root. Tana Rabbanan, Shoresh Ilan Shegvah Min Aretz Shel Shetefachim. The Braisa wants to point this out, that you could have Shroshim that on one side are above three tefachim, on another side they're not. Or Yesh Chalal Tachteim Shlosha Tefachim. Or, for example, there's a digging below the surface of the ground where the Shroshim are now exposed to that area that's below ground. Is Afal Pishitzido Echid Shavu La'aretz. Even though on one side, you can look at the upper side of this Shoresh, and it's equal to the ground level, exactly equal. Hareza lo yeshiv aleim, you're not allowed to sit on such a Shoresh. Why? Lefisha ein ola be'ilan. You're not allowed to climb up a tree, which means you're not allowed to benefit from a tree. We'll discuss for a moment exactly why not. And in this case, even though on one side, it is at ground level, but because of the digging below on the other three sides of this Shoresh, it is exposed to an area that's above three tefachim. And the reason why the Gemara in Beitza says that you're not allowed to benefit from this tree, you're not allowed to climb up the tree, is because Gzeirah Shemiyala V'yitlosh, you might pluck some fruits off the tree. And I made this point and emphasize because it's become relevant to the sugya of today. And not only are you enjoined from climbing the tree, v'chein ein nitlin b'tree, but Elon, you're not allowed to, let's say, stretch your arms out in such a way that you climb by leaning on the tree, and it sort of projects you. V'ein nish'onim b'ilan, you can't put your back against the tree, because that's also called leaning and benefiting from the tree. And all these cases are prohibited under this general prohibition of not benefiting from a tree. We once had a sugi, if you recall, about Erev Tchumen, where he left a Muslim Shtei Sudas hanging on a branch of a tree. Does he have access to them? He's benefiting from the tree. You may remember that. And now we have an additional point in the Braisa. So lo yala be'ila mibojom v'yeshiv shom kol yom kula. The Iser is not just the action of taking this benefit from the tree, but even if you're in a passive state during the course of Shabbos, you climbed up the tree on Erev Shabbos, nevertheless, by remaining on the tree, every split second that you're on the tree, you're benefiting from the tree that's holding you up. And that's also prohibited. Later on, we're going to have machlokas, what he should do in that case. Let's say he didn't realize it was Shabbos, and now he's stuck on top of a tree. Should he jump off the tree? What should he do? Now the Braisa adds another point, that when the Rabbanan prohibited enjoying the benefit of the tree, they extended that prohibition to include an animal as well, because they were afraid that maybe he'll capture the animal, or maybe he'll move mukta. And therefore, echad ilon v'echad kol behema. In other words, the shvus includes any sort of benefit from the animal. Now, in the original formulation, in the end of Masechta Beitz, it says ein rochvin al gavi behema. The enactment was very concerned about riding an animal, because if you ride an animal, again, you come close to the foliage of a tree, you might be tempted inadvertently to pluck a fruit from the tree. But our Bryce is pointing out that just like in the case of Elon, even if you're not climbing the tree, but you're sitting on its branches or its roots, or you are leaning on it, any benefit you get from the tree is included in this shvus. So too in the case of Behema, any benefit you get from the animal. Now, this gzera only applies in two cases. Number one, an Elon. Number two, a Behema. Anything else that's part of the structure of the earth is mutter. Therefore, avol bar, ma'ar, siach, ma'ar, v'gader. A bar is a certain kind of a roundish, roundish digging. Or a siach is more of a longer kind of a ditch. And ma'ar has a roof, it's a cave. And gader's a fence. All this, matapis v'yol, matapis v'yorit. You know, have a blast. You want to climb up, you want to jump out, you want to play with your grandchildren, do what you want. There's no problem here. These are not ilonos or animals. Vafilu hein mea ama, even if they are 100 ama tall, which might be appropriate in the case of a gadir, for example. You could have, climb the fence, as we say in Yiddish, tzol zayin gezunt. Tani Chada, now we get to the issue of someone who is, you know, he's stuck on the tree, and now it's Shabbos, you know, it became nightfall. Is Chada, according to one Bryce, so it says him Ola Mutaleret. We're not going to penalize him and have him stay there for the rest of Shabbos hanging on the tree. He can jump down from the tree. And the same thing, Lechora, should apply to an animal, but the Ritva says that if he climbed onto an animal, then everybody's going to agree. We're going to have another Braisa here, Tani Chada, also Leire, that if you're up on a tree, you're not allowed to get down from the tree. But the Ritva says that doesn't apply to an animal, because the longer you sit on an animal, this Tsar Bali Chaim. So then we're going to allow him to jump off the animal. But in the case of a tree, we have a contradiction between two Braisos. So the Gemara is going to offer many, many different possible reconciliations. Lo kasha. Kan mi bod yom, kan mi shechashecha. When the Braisa says that we're going to allow you to go down from the tree on Shabbos, that's because you didn't violate any Iser in climbing up the tree, because you climbed up the tree before Shabbos. But kan, the Braisa that wants to penalize you and keep you hanging there, sitting on the tree for the whole balance of Shabbos, that's Mishach HaShecha, that's when he violated the Iser of climbing on a tree on Shabbos, and they imposed a penalty. Nebuch, the guy, has to stay on the tree the entire Shabbos. I don't know what he's going to do, frankly, you know, in terms of his biological needs, limineihem, I don't know. Ibois Ema, another way of reconciling this theory in the Braisa, Hava Ha Mishach HaShecha. In truth, both Bryces are addressing the case where he climbed up on Shabbos itself. But was he amazing and he deserves a knas? Or was he a shogeg? Lo kasha, kan b'shogeg, kan b'mezid. So the Bryce that's lenient and allows him to jump off the tree or climb down the tree, that's because he was a shogeg. He did not deliberately violate the Iser of climbing on a tree on Shabbos. He by same another way of reconciling. The hub, the hub, is shogeg. The Gemara now introduces a world-class machlokas that applies all over Shas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about whether we impose a penalty in the case of Shogeg, because tomorrow he's going to tell us he's a Shogeg when he's really amazed. And Rabbi Meir says that we have to impose this penalty even in the case of Shogeg if we want to give it any teeth. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we cannot, and we should not penalize someone who is a shogeg. Mar Sover Kansinon, Umar Sover Lo Kansinon. So the Braisa that says that in a case where you climbed up the tree, that you have to remain there on the tree, it was Misha Hashecha, it was Bishogeg, but nevertheless we impose this penalty. Whereas the Tan of the Braisa that says it's, you're allowed to go down the tree, he holds that we don't impose the Knas in the case of Shogeg. Omar Afuna Bereid Rav Yeshua Kitanoi. This issue about whether we allow him to go down from the tree or we make him stay on the tree is really dependent upon a machlokas tanoim deep in Masechta Zvachim. And now we're getting into the laws of Nesinas Dam. And if you want to hear more about that, you'll have to come to my class today at 10:45, because we're actually up to that discussion about Nesinas Dam. In any event, when two karbonos are being brought, and each karbon has its own dam, which was received in a reciprocal, which is called Kabbalas Adam, then you do the dam and the Nesinas Adam on the Mizbeach for each karbon separately. But let's say he doesn't remember which dam belongs to which karbon, or even let's go a step further. If let's say the two damim got mixed up in the same Mizrak, in the same kos, in the same receptacle. So then we're going to subdivide matanos, which means Nesina al Gabi Mizbeach, into actually the three basic categories. Maybe today we'll only talk about two, depending upon how much time we have. But we have Nitanim b'matana achas. For example, the case is Bechar. And the Dam of Bechar requires only one Nesina. So if you have two different karbonos, two different bechoros, but they both have the exact identical nesina of one nesina, matona achas, then yinosnu b'matona achas. Then he can dip his fingers into the dam, and he's got a mixture of the two dams, or if there are two different kosos, he's going to have to take from both. And since it's only one nesina, he doesn't really lose anything, because mimarev shach, he's got the dam of both of these two karbonos, both of which are bechar, on to Mizbeach. Another example where he has no issue whatsoever, and that's b'matan arba. So a chatos is a karbon that requires nesina times four different nesinos on the Mizbeach. And if the dam of one chatos got mixed up with the dam of another chatos, is yinosim b'matan arba. He loses nothing because he's going to take from this mixture of dam four matanos. But what happens in the following case? B'matan arba, b'matan achas. He's got the dam of achatos that got mixed up with the dam of bechor. And now he's going to get into problems. Why? Because if he is going to do four nesinos, then with regard to the dam of the Bechar, he did also four Nesinos with that Dam, which is mixed in together with the Dam of the Chatas. And then he violates Bal Tosef. And if, on the other hand, he would only do one Matana, tipping his hat in favor of the Bechar, then he's violating Bal Tigra vis-a-vis the Chatas. And here we have a Machlokes Tanoim. Rabbi Eliezer, Omi Yinosnu B'matan Arba. And what we're going to do is we're going to give preference to the Zrikas Adam of the Chatos, which requires four matanos, and that sort of swallows up the Bechar. And we're going to override the Bal Tosef over here, meaning vis-a-vis the Dam of the Bechar, we've now done four Nesinos, which is in a violation of Bal Tosef. We're going to override that for the sake of the mitzvah of Chatos of Arba. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Yinosnu b'matana achas. No. Let's do one Nesina, because if we go beyond one Nesina, then vis-a-vis the Bechar, we have violated the Isur Bal Tosef. Amalo Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer turns to Rabbi Yeshua, and he says, Matana Achas, how could you say such a thing? Hareyu overal Bal Tigra, vis-a-vis the Karvan Chatos, you are violating Bal Tigra. Amalo Rabbi Yeshua, and you're in better shape? Hareyu over Bal Tosef. If it's not Bal Tigra, then when you do four Nesinos, you're violating Bal Tosef. Omar, Rabbi Lozo, lo amru elik shuhu bi atzmo. the violation of Al-Tosif only applies when you know exactly what, you can identify exactly what the Chefetz Shel Mitzvah is, and then you deliberately add to the mitzvah. That's Bal Tosef. But here, he's not deliberately adding to the mitzvah. He's only doing four nesinos because he can't find the dam that belongs to the Bechar. So in such a case, when he's doing it only because he wants to guarantee that he has the key of a mitzvah vis-a-vis the chatos of four nesinos, he doesn't violate Bal Tosef vis-a-vis the Bechar. He's not over. And the Ritva says that according to the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, Ein Isur Bal Tosef Elikshim Eskavim Lahosef Ala Mitzvah. That's what he means by Kshula Atzma. But if he's doing it because of a Safek, he's not trying to violate Bal Tosef. And we had discussions about this, if you recall, in the case where he wears two pairs of tefillin simultaneously at the beginning of this parak. And this is the Shita, the thrust of Rabbi Eliezer's approach, that there's no Bal Tosef to worry about. Amalo Rabbi Yoshua, lo nemar baltigra elikshu biatzmo. The same logic should apply to baltigra. I'm not reducing the number of matanos of the chatos. I am not violating baltigra vis-a-vis the chatos. I'm in a suffix situation. I'm trying to do the best I can. V'od, and furthermore, I'm Rabbi Yoshua, kishenasato, if I go with your approach, and I do four nesinos, then avarta al baltosiv, viasisa maase biodecha. You have actively violated baltosiv. Meaning, kishalona sato, if I only do, as Rabbi Yeshua insists, one matana avarta al baltigra, below asisa maase biodecha. I didn't violate baltigra in an active way, when I didn't add the three extra nesinos, the increment between one and four nesinos for the chatos, I did so in a passive state. So in this case where I have two options of baltigra, baltosiv, I'm going to opt for baltigra because that's called shevi altas, and that's passive. But if I go with four nesinos, the way you, Rabbi Lezer, insist, then I violated baltosiv in an active sense. And the Gemara now would like to apply this machlok shim Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, to our discussion about someone who is sitting on a tree and whether we're going to allow him to go down from the tree on Shabbos. Le Rabbi Eliezer, diomar hosom kumva se adiv. Rabbi Eliezer wants to go in favor of an action, add the other three matanos, hachinami here too. Yerit. We want him to actively get off the tree. Why? Because if he remains on the tree, then every second he's on the tree, he's violating the Isur of benefiting from the tree. But Rabbi Yeshua, the Omer Hossam, Shevi Altase Odiv, Rabbi Yeshua reduces the Nesina from four down to one, because he wants you to be in a passive state, Ochinami here too. It's best if he remains sitting where he is, on the top of the Elon, rather, and violate the Isur B'Shevi Altase in a passive way, rather than jump off the Elon, and again, do something which is in itself a violation of this Isur, but it's Bekumvase. And the Gemara rejects it. Dil Malohi, you have no right to set up this matching. Adkan, Loka Amar Rabbi Eliezer Hossam, when did Rabbi Eliezer say that we jack it up to four matanos and Kumvase Odev, if it's best to do that action? Eladika Ovid, mitzvah, he's doing the four nesinos for the sake of the mitzvah of chatos. Amal hacha, the law of it mitzvah, if he climbs down from the tree, what mitzvah is he doing? It's hachinami lo yerid. Even Rabbi Eliezer would concede that he shouldn't get down from the tree, because if he gets down from the tree, he's actively getting benefit from the tree, violating this Isur, and he's not doing any mitzvah. Rabbi Eliezer is only in favor of kumva se when there's a mitzvah involved. Inami, and the flip side of the coin is Adkan lokom Rabbi Yeshua Hasam. When did Rabbi Yeshua say I advocate in favor of Shevi Alta Seadiv Ella? And here we turn to Daf Kuf Amid Beis, the loka of an Isura. When? By abstaining and being passive, he avoids violating an Isur. Aval hacha dika avid Isur. But here, if he's in a passive state, then every moment he is violating an Isur. Why? Because he's benefiting from the Elon as he sits on the Elon. Now the Gemara quotes a different set of brises, which also have, it seems, a contradiction. Tanach, how do we have one brisa? Echad Elon Lach. The Echad Elon Yavesh. That we're going to apply the Iser of benefiting from a tree. Even in the case of a tree that has no moisture, it's totally dried up. And it's not producing any fruit, so there's really no Gzeiro Shemiyal V'yitlosh. V'tanya Yidip, but the other Bryce says, when do we prohibit you from climbing up a tree that's only Belach? A tree that has its moisture and it's producing fruit. Al V'yavesh, it's all dried up, there's no fruit. Mutar. Rabbi Yehuda Lokasha Kan. Again, we're going to have a number of different ways of reconciling these two prices. The first one is Rav Yehuda, and he says, Be shegizo machlif, and kan be she'en gizo machlif. One case is where, although right now in its present state the tree is dry, but there's still moisture in the roots of the tree, and therefore there's potential and an assumption that the tree down the line will in the future produce fruits. But Khan, the brisa that says that you're allowed to get onto this tree, that's in a case of a tree that's completely dried up. It has no moisture whatsoever. It's legamre, yavesh, and therefore we can assume this tree is gone. It's a dead tree. It will never produce. So the Gemara says, Gizo machlif yavesh karisle? Are you really going to fit this pshat into the brisa? The brisa calls it yavesh. And now you're telling me that it's gizo machlif, that it's only yavesh at this particular moment. Maybe it was a drought, it was a dry season, but it's really a tree that produces. I wouldn't call that yavesh, and therefore the Gemara rejects this way of reconciling the two brises. Ela lo kasha, kan b'yemos hachama, kan b'yemos hagshamim. You have a tree that's absolutely dead, but during the summer months, none of the trees are producing, right? It's dry all over the place. So, if that be the case, there won't be any issue of a spectator, of Maris Ayin, that he's going to come to assume that you're allowed to be mishtamesh with an Elon Lach. I mean, everything's dry. But Khan, the Brisa that says you're not allowed to climb such a tree, it's Bimos HaGshamim. And Bimos HaGshamim, we can't tell the difference between a Lach and a Yavesh. I mean, everything is wet, is dripping. And here, if we allow him to climb up this dry tree, we have a problem with Maris Ayin. The Gemara asks, "Bimos hachama," and what are you telling me that bimos hachama? You know, we can't tell the difference. What are you talking about? It's still nikar. Everybody could see that it's yavesh. Hanusri peri. What do you mean? Everyone could see that it's yavesh. There are still fruits from the previous spring that are on the tree. So the Gemara answers, "But aleka peri." That there are no trees from previous seasons, and therefore it's nikar, it's very clear to everyone that it's a dry tree. Other trees, left, right, and center, are producing fruit, and we are harvesting the fruits, the apples, the oranges, and the pears that came during the spring season. But this tree, during the warmer period, is not producing anything. Everybody sees that it's a dried up tree, and therefore there's no Maris Ayin. People might suspect you of climbing on a tree that produces, that has lachos, that has moisture. The Gemara is still not happy with this. V'halkar natri kinsi. Even if there are no fruits on the tree, you have one tree in this whole orchard during the summer months that's not producing anything, but nevertheless, there are kismim, there are small little twigs that are falling off the tree, and certainly when he climbs up the tree, these twigs are going to fall out, these kismim. And therefore we should prohibit it, because although the tree is not producing fruit, but it has these kismim, which are small pieces of tree, of wood. And the Gemara says, Bigaduda, we're talking about a case where all the branches of the tree basically fell off. And therefore nothing is falling off this tree, not even kismim are falling off the tree. Eini, but what are you going to do with the story that took place in Rav, with Rav? V'harav ikla, Le'af Satya, a place by that name, he showed up there, the Asa Bigduda. And the local Jews ask him, are we allowed to climb up a geduta? A geduta is a tree that doesn't even have branches. It's just like the, you know, basically the trunk of the tree. And Rav, Asar, he said that it's awesome. So Gemara says, nay. Rav Bika Matzah Begadah Begadah. This is an idiomatic phrase. He saw an open field that was dangerous, and he put a fence around it, which means that he noticed that the people in that particular town were not great scholars. They were not such meticulous observers of the law of the halacha, and he was afraid that if he tells them that they're allowed to climb up this tree, which is called a geduda tree, they'll come to climb up other trees. They'll take license, and they'll be more makeup. Omar Rami Bar Abba Omar of Asi. Are you allowed to tromp? Are you allowed to walk on grass on Shabbos? And let's assume it's inevitable that you're going to pull out some grass. So he says, if a person runs fast with his feet, then he's a sinner. Which is a remez from a Pasuk in Mishlei, that you're a sinner if by walking on this grass, you will inevitably pull the grass out of the ground and violate the Isur of Tlisha. But yet, we have a contradiction between two brises on this very issue. Tani chada mutol lelech al gabi asov b'shabes v'tanya idach asur. And once again, we're going to have a whole slew of reconciliations between these two brises. Lokasha. Ha, the brisa that says it's asur is belachim. These are wet grass, and wet grass is easy and inevitable that you'll pull out the grass. Ha, but the brisa that allows you, it's during the summer months perhaps, and it's beyevashim. And yevashim, since they're not growing from the ground, they don't nurture from the ground, there's no isur tlisha. So even in the worst case scenario, if your shoes, you know, have spikes on them, and you'll pull up the grass, that's not a violation of tlisha, at least not on a deraisa. Eboy, same another answer is, havaha, bilachim. We're really, in both prices, talking about wet grass. Velo kasha, kan bimos hachama, kan bimos hakshom. During the winter months, there are seeds that are inside the giv'olim, what's called, you know, these round pieces of vegetation. And therefore, he is going to remove, through his walking, stopping on the grass, he's going to remove these seeds. But Khan, in the case of Yemos HaGshamim, there are no seeds in the giv'olim. Iboy same another race, Ohaba Bimos HaChama. And even though Bimos HaChama there are seeds, Lokasha Ha Soyim Misane, he's wearing regular shoes. And if you wear regular flat shoes, flat sole, you're not going to come to rip out the grass. But Ha Delo Soyim Misane. In the Brisa that is Machmir, that's a case where he's not wearing shoes and he's actually walking barefoot. What happens is when you walk barefoot on grass, the grass inevitably gets caught between your toes, and as you're walking, you pull up the grass from your toes. Ibois Ema, Hava Ha, Disayim Misani, he's wearing shoes. Lokasha Ha Disle Ukte, Ha Delesle Ukte. The Brisa that says it's Osir is talking about shoes that have spikes on them. And these spikes will inevitably rip off grass. But ha, the brisa that says it's mutter, that's talking about the lesle ukte. He's got a flat sole, and he's not necessarily going to rip out grass. Ibois ema, hava ha de isle ukte. Even if he's wearing these spiked shoes, ha, the brisa that says it's also disle sharcha. This grass is very long, like a wick, a very long wick. And in such a case, it's definitely going to get caught in his spiked shoes. But ha, the brisa that allows it, that's a case of lesle sarcha, the very short grass, maybe they mowed the lawn already, and we're not afraid that he'll rip off the grass. Now, what's the final conclusion, l'alacha? Are you allowed to walk on grass on Shabbos? Va'idna, in our time, Kaimala, we paskin, Kirabi Shimon, and therefore Kulu Shari, in all the scenarios that described above, it doesn't matter if it's Mosach Chami, Mosach Sham, with shoes, without shoes, spike shoes, without spike shoes, is there tall grass or short? In all cases, we're allowed to walk the grass. unless there's a big sign that says, please don't walk on the grass. That's a different issue. Anyway, why is Rabbi Shimon the matir? Because Rabbi Shimon holds Davar Sheni Miskaven is mutter, and he has no interest whatsoever, no intention to rip out the grass, and therefore it's mutter. Now, from here to the end of the daf is Agadita. And since we started less than an hour ago, I'm going to push it, and anybody who has to go has to go, especially if on your clock it's getting close to 1 a.m. But if you can stay for the Agadita, then kol hakavod. Amar Rami Bar Chama Rav Asi Osel Yom Sheyachuv Es Ishto Lidvar Mitzvah. Once we've quoted this pasuk in Mishle of Otzper Aglaim Chote, and the Aglaim, the legs, very often are symbolic of the more private parts on the top of the legs, and a person who wants to force his wife to have an intimate relationship, that's a Chote, that's a sinner. You have to get your wife on board. Shenemar, the pasuk says, V'otzper aglaim chote. Otz is when you rush something. And when you see the other partner is not agreeable, so you rush it through. And you impose your will on the other person. And in Tashmish Amita, that's called a chote. And this means even if a person feels that he wants to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Ona, for example, and that's why he's initiating this process, but nevertheless, this mitzvah is dependent upon her agreement. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi kol hakofa ishto l'dvar mitzvah. Again, dvar mitzvah means for the sake of the mitzvah voted, but he's forcing her and compelling her. Havyin lo bodim shedim uganim. His children will go off the path. Amar Rav Iko bar Chinin amai kra'a. What's the source that gives us an allusion to this punishment? And the answer is, in that very same pasuk in Mishlei that we quoted early in the beginning of the pasuk, it says, gam b'lo das nefesh lo tov. In other words, it's not good for the nefashos, which are the children. That's an allusion to the next generation of the nefashos that will be born from this action that was done below das, as the pasuk says, without the approval of his wife. That's not a good thing. Tanya Rami Yochi will also have a brisa to support this statement of Rav Ika. The pasuk says, "Gam below das nefesh lo tov zeakov for ishto l'dvar mitzvah v'otzer aglaim chote zeabol v'shoneh." Now, this last part of the brisa is going to occupy our minds. It's a very difficult piece in the brisa. We can understand very well that the pasuk in Mishlei is the source to derive the iser of forcing your wife into a sexual act. But in the case of the Sefer, and he has one be'il after the other, presumably with his wife's approval, maybe he's imposing on her, what's the chet over here? Eini, is that sova? Omar Rava, Rotsa Lassus, Kalbonim Schara. If he wants to have male children, then the school for that is Yivol V'Yashana. He should have two, Bezechers, how you say in English, two sequential bios, whatever the word is that I'm looking for. And what happens is that as a result of the first bi'ilah, his wife gets interested in the intimacy. And then what happens is when he gets to the second bi'ilah, that's called ishto mazras tchila. And as a result of her arousal first, you know, he's giving up on his arousal. He's not so selfish. He's interested in her and pleasing her. Therefore, there'll be zochet to banim scharet. So why does the Braisa say that it's such a bad thing, deriving it from Mishlei, if he has a bila and then another bila afterwards, lokasha, kan ladas, kan shalol ladas. The Braisa is saying that even though maybe she agreed to the first bila, but she didn't really have in mind the second bila, and you forced it on the second bila, that's not a good thing. If on the other hand, as a result of the first bila, she was put in the mood for a second bila, then you'll have banim scharet. She'll have wonderful children. Because she has a taiva, she desires the mitzvah, and she takes the initiative, and this we're going to derive from Leah. At the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, they were not able to produce what we call nivonim. Nivonim, Bilashon Bina. because Moshe Rabbeinu at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim tells us, I want to choose four judges, those who fit all these categories. Number one, they're Chachamim. Number two, they are Nevonim. Nevonim is a higher, deeper level of Chachma, of Mevin Dover Mitok Dover. And then they are also Yiduim. In other words, everybody recognizes them as great judges. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was asking for. These were the this was the CV that he was looking for. But at the end, Lebesov is Ksiv. What did he find? There are only two out of the three qualities and attributes. He couldn't find Nevonim, who had Bina. But with regard to Leah, it says, "V'ilugabi Leah Ksiv, atetze Leah likrasov, atomrei lai tovo kisachar schartich," meaning that I have, so to speak, hired you by with the Dudoyim, the story with Rachel over there, and then she initiates, you know, his coming into our tent to have a relationship. And what child was born from that particular episode, and that was Yisachar, and Ksiv, and it says about Yisachar, in Divrei Hayomim, it says, Mivnei Yisachar yodei bina le'itim ladas mayasad Yisrael, rasheyem asayim v'cholecheyem alpiyem, that who are the yodei bina? Those who have bina, the Nevonim, about whom Klal Yisrael came to ask all sorts of issues and raise questions that they needed guidance for and rulings in Psak Halacha, it was Bnei Yisachar. And this Yisachar, the father of these Bnei Yisachar, called Yodei Bina, is none other than the Yisachar who was born as a result of the relationship in which Leah took the initiative. And he, Yisachar, represents something that even supersedes the time of the Dor of Moshe Rabbeinu when he couldn't find Avonim. Again, you could ask me, well, what do you mean he couldn't find Avonim? There were certainly Yisachar people around. But it means conceptually that down the line, in the future of history, the Torah is indicating by omitting the word Nevonim that we couldn't find Nevonim. And when we couldn't find Nevonim, the only place that we found some Nevonim, at least, was amongst the Bnei Yisachar. There's a very famous Hasidic work called the Bnei Yisachar. Amy, the Gemara asks, is this really true that it's a great mila for a woman to initiate the intimacy? V'amar Rav Yitzchok bar Avdimi, Eser Klolos Niskal L'Chava. Chava was cursed with 10 metaphysical curses when she ate from the Eitz Hadas, one of which is that she would not be able to be Tovea B'peh. In other words, it would be, in a sense, humiliating for her to initiate the action. Tichsiv. Okay, now we could read this entire Pasuk, but I'm not going to read the entire Pasuk because the Gemara is going to take apart the Pasuk piecemeal. Ela Isha Omar, etc., etc. So the first thing that it says in that pasuk is Harbe Arbe Elu Shnei Tipe Domim, and this is referring, because of the double language of Harbe Arbe, to two types of blood that she was cursed with, Achas Dam Nida the Achas Dam Besulim, both of which are not pleasant experiences, but that's part of the metaphysical curse for Chava's role in the Eitz Hadas, and you might ask, why should we be punished for that? That's a different issue. Itzvot Neich is the next word in the Pasuk. Zetzar Gidol Bonim, because women play a more major role, primary role in raising the children. They suffer from raising the children. It's a big hassle sometimes. It's a lot of nachas too sometimes. Vehero Neich, the next part of the Pasuk, is Zetzara Ibur. That's the pregnancy itself, which is really rough sometimes. And then it says, Be'etzev tel dibonim kimashma. Oh, that's simple. That means the birth process itself. Then the pasuk goes on, V'yeli sheikh tshukaseich melamit sha'isha mishtokekes al baila b'sha shehu yotze l'derech. She gets very lonely, and she really has a taiva to have a relationship with him when he goes out on a long trip. V'huyim shel bach is melamit sha'isha tovas b'lev v'ha'ish toveh b'peh. That a woman is embarrassed to initiate intimacy, and the man, he has no compunctions. You know, he'll say, time for it. And then Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avdimi adds another postscript. He says, he mida tova b'noshin. In other words, the fact that a woman is misbayeshes to be toveh bepeh, that's really a good attribute. So we see it's not a good idea for a woman, it's not tzniyus to for a woman to initiate the intimacy, and then we go back to Leah, we don't understand that. So kikam rinon, when did we say? And that was Rabbi Yochanan's statement that if a woman is toveh bepeh, and she initiates the sexual intimacy, then she'll have great children, she'll be rewarded. That's the Marze Artsuye Kamei. And what it means is she shows herself to be beautiful and attractive in front of her husband. She says, Divrei Ritsui, Divrei Chiba, all sorts of words that are pacifying and so forth. And he will get the message. But not that she outright says it. If she outright says it, that's not within the lines of Tanius. So the Gemara calculates here, Rav Yisrael Bar Avdimi opens up with 10 klolos, and on the list he only enumerates 7 klolos, Hadi Sheva Havi. So Ki Asa, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel Omar, he says, let's add 3 more klolos to round off the number 10. Atufa Ki Avel, that she has to cover her hair, which is something that an Avel does. Back in the day, the Avelim used to have what's called Atifas HaRosh. We don't have it anymore. But they used to cover their heads. Umenuda, Mikol Adam. I don't know what that's referring to. It sounds like she's not allowed to have a relationship with any other man. Chavusha Beis Hasurim, and she's locked up in a jail. What does that mean? So Gemara asks, "My menuda Mikol Adam." What did Rav Dimi have in mind when he said menuda Mikol Adam? Ilei Mishum Di Asula Yichud. If it means that she's not allowed to be alone privately with another man other than her husband, Iunami Asulei Bi Yichud. That's not a curse that's bestowed upon a woman. A man is not allowed to have Yichud with a woman other than his wife. Ela, but rather, the Asiri Lebei Trei. Unbelievable. I tell you, Rabosai, this Gemara boggled my mind. It's a metaphysical curse that a woman cannot be married to 2 men. Whereas a man, according to biblical laws, allowed to marry 2 women. B'masnisa Tana, we have a brisa that adds another 3 klolos. Megadela Seir Klilit, Kil Lilit. There's a shade, a demon that has very, very long hair. Her name is Lilit. And women have to deal with long hair. V'yoshevet u'mishtanes mayim kibeman. She sits when she urinates like an animal. Benaseis kar lebaila. She's a pillow for her husband. During sexual intimacy, she's on the bottom. So the Gemara asks V'idach, what about Rav Dimi? Why did he omit these 3 cases? He came up with adding 3 to the 7 to round it off at 10. Hani shvachu hula. Adarabba, according to Rav Dimi's understanding, these 3 categories that are listed here in the Brice about describing women are positive for the women. They're not negative for the women. This is not a klala. For example, the fact that she has long hair, well, long hair could be very, very beautiful, very attractive. And the fact that she sits when she urinates, adarabba, and that's an expression of tzniyus. And the fact that she's underneath her husband during the sexual intimacy, that's not a tircha for her. That she feels very comfortable about that. Adarabba, if she'd have to climb on him all the time, maybe that's a tircha. D'yom Rav Chiya, my dichsiv. Now we're talking about a woman's posture during urination. What does the pasuk mean in Iov when it says, "Malfenu mi behemos eretz umeof shomayim yichak menu"? And this is teaching us that we could learn different hanhogos tovos, the proper way of etiquette of behaving, through the chachma that God gave to animals. How so? So we go through the pasuk piece by piece. Milfeno, that has to do with lifanot, which means to urinate, mi behemos. We're going to derive from behemos. What's the tznius when a person urinates? Zo pirda, and this is referring to a kind of a donkey, shekoras umishtanes mayim. It sort of bends down in order to urinate. Then that's tznius. And when it says in the next part of the pasuk, me of hashamayim yechak menu, means that we look at a certain kind of an oaf, namely a tarnagol, and we're going to derive chachma, wisdom, from a tarnagol. What's so brilliant about a tarnagol? Shemefayes virak acharkat boel. That the male the male will initiate some sort of pius of chiva, some sort of a love kind of relationship before the be'ilah, which the Gemara is going to explain. Omer Rabbi Yochanan el Molei lo nitne Torah yinu lemeidim tznius michato, because the cat doesn't urinate publicly, but and if it defecates or whatever, it covers it over. And Gezel Minamola, we learn theft and the ethics of being careful about other people's property from an ant, because the ants, during the entire summer months, will gather together their kernels of wheat for the entire winter, and never will an ant steal from the pile of another ant. An amazing feature of nature. And we have to read of Rav Avigdor Miller writes books about these kinds of Gemaras. V'arayos mi Yona. Yona, a dove, is very loyal to its mate, and it never looks for another mate. And derech eretz mi tarnagol, there's sexual intimacy we should derive from a tarnagol, shemefayes v'acher kach boel. Umay mefayes lo. So what does the rooster say to the hen in order to express words of chiba? Amrav yudam arav, this is pretty amazing. Hachi kamala, this is what, I don't know verbally, but this is by body motion, what the rooster says to the hen. Zavinina le ziga de matuli ad kareich. I'm going to buy you a long gown, so to speak, that reaches the ground, and will even cover your feet. Lebasa hachi, okay? So after, so he says that we should learn from the Tarnagoles, is the Ben Yoyoda, that a person should mefayis his wife by buying her all the clothes that she needs, and that's a chiba. And Lebasa hachi, after he's boel, then he pays up. He made a promise that he would buy her something and give her some malbush, and let's see how he pays up his debt. And Lebasa hachi, after the be'ilah, what does he do? Amalah lishmatete lekarbulese dahu tarnagusa the tarnagol he isle velozavinalich. He sort of in a sense is down on himself, so to speak, because what happens is the karboles, that's that red crown on top of his head, is going to fall off. Just read the English here. A rooster appeases its mate and then has relations with it. And my mefaisle, how does a rooster appease its mate? Here's what it says to her before the having relations. I will buy you a coat which reaches down to your feet. After mating, he says to her, may the crest... Carvalisa is called in English a crest of that cock, and that's a euphemism for himself, be cut off if he has the means to buy a coat, but he doesn't buy it for you. So before relations, the rooster spreads its wings, an indication that he will buy a coat which reaches the ground. And after the act, it shakes its head and bends it down towards his partner to say that the crest on his head should be cut off. Okay then, so we're up to the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Aleph, which Amir Tz Hashem, we will pick up tomorrow.